Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, a deal or maybe no deal with new input from President Trump, the relief bill that took months to hammer out, maybe back to the drawing board. New York Times columnist Tom Friedman.
This isn't just watching the sausage being made. This is just so suboptimal for a serious country in the middle of its worst public health crisis in its life.
And mask wearing may be up, but a new viral mutation may test our diligence again. The months ahead with Dr. Atul Gawande.
This viral mutation seems to drive a faster spread. The measures we normally take will be slightly less effective in stopping it.
Those stories, plus shopping season looked a little different this year. Head of Fanatics, Michael Rubin, says e-commerce converts might change the game forever.
We definitely skipped ahead 2 or 3 years forward from an e-commerce perspective.
It's Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020.
Christmas Eve Eve.
Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is out today. Joe, I think this is the last day that you and I are both going to be here before Christmas, and I think that's why we both kind of put on our Christmas finest this morning.
Right.
Great minds. Thinking alike here.
Exactly. Right. Tomorrow we won't have an opportunity to fly our or to show our colors. So here we are. Here we are today.
Exactly.
Looks nice.
Here we are. Yeah.
It's festive.
It is.
Speaking of festive,
it's good day.
Happy Festivus. Happy Festivus too.
Is that today?
No, it's good.
Yes.
No, but we won't be
for
able to say that.
Right.
Festivus for the rest of us. So I'm going to air a few grievances right during the show. As that would be nothing new, though, would it?
Oh, good. That would be unusual. You're right.
I know. We have a developing story on the stimulus front. In a Twitter video last night, President Trump called the $900 billion COVID relief bill passed by Congress an unsuitable disgrace. He urged lawmakers to make changes to the measure, including much bigger direct payments, also cutting out some what he called wasteful spending.
Well, they are now planning to send back to my desk is much different than anticipated. It really is a disgrace. I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, meanwhile, said Democrats will see if they can pass a measure for $2,000 in direct payments by unanimous consent. Earlier yesterday, President-elect Biden called the $900 billion package, in his words, a down payment, said more funding would be needed.
This bill is just the first step, a down payment in addressing the crisis, the crises, more than one, that we're in. There's a lot more work to do. Early next year, I'm going to put forward to the Congress my plans for what comes next.
You saw, Becky, they list, I mean, I saw some, I don't know the total background on some of the money going to some foreign countries and some of the stuff that they find that seems really outlandish and outrageous. But if you add all it up, you might be able to get the 2,000, and it would be better. It just on face value, I mean, knee jerk, you can say I'd rather have it going to people here than get it above 600 than some of the crazy stuff.
But say this now. You know, like, he had the chance. He chose not to get directly involved in the negotiations while they were taking place. He let Steven Mnuchin do the talking for him. Steven Mnuchin said he was happy with this bill. You're talking about something that has been months and months and months of waiting to see if they were going to do anything else. And you can blame both sides at different points for when they've slowed down and done it. But we thought at the beginning of this week that, okay, there's a deal that's finally done. I don't know if he's kicking this back to the starting line. You heard the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi immediately tweeted out and said, great, we're with them on the $2,000 per person. They want to do this vote today in the House to see if there's unanimous consent. Only one congressional person right. would have to say no for right. that
That's
to get squashed.
Yep.
But again, you're talking about you're up against these dead, these hard deadlines. And, you know, like, you got to be kidding.
Like, well,
everybody's got a problem with this. I've heard AOC complain about the bill because she didn't get to read it. I've heard Ted Cruz complain about it. Everybody has complained about this bill.
Have people sent you some of the stuff that's in there, some of the pork, some of the crazy pork? Instead of going up from $900 billion to get to $2,000, why don't you, there's millions and hundreds of millions of dollars in there that aren't going for COVID relief.
Because you know how the sausage, you know how the sausage gets made on this. Every time somebody says, no, I'm not going to vote for this, they promise them some stupid thing that say, okay, your project can get in here. And you're right. Is it the right way to govern? Probably not. But without it, is something going to get passed? Probably
not. I think we could use some of it better
I'm not arguing in favor of it, saying that it's a great thing. But again, this is very late in the day. I think President Trump would have signed this bill on Monday, but because of the stupid rule where they want to put it on parchment again, it takes right. days to give that through. He had some time to think it through and think, okay, it's not the best bill. I agree.
Well,
there's all kinds of stupid stuff that
bucks?
Probably shouldn't be in there.
I mean, $600 is better than nothing, but what's $600 really going to do?
$600 is better than nothing, but you will also have a lot of people, including, you know, many Republicans that we've talked to have said, this should be targeted. It shouldn't be going to people who are still working. You know, if you want to give more money to right. people or to different industries that have been hard hit or to employees in those industries that have been hard hit, people who have lost their jobs, lost all of their income, that you should be giving more money to them and not to people who are continuing to work and get through this.
Right.
Look, well, you can have all kinds of arguments. It made a lot of sense, I think, to give direct payments to everybody, at least everybody under a certain income level
right.
earlier this year when things shut down so quickly and you wanted to make sure that the economy was stimulated. You got to start wondering, it's a lot of money. You're still talking about almost another $1 trillion, which is how yeah. much of GDP, you know, like what percent of GDP are we continuing to push in? And yeah, you know, this is a time, if you're going to be spending a lot of money, this is probably a time. You'll hear people from both sides of the aisle arguing that. But you'll also have people saying, look, if we're going to do this, let's make it targeted so that it makes the most
well,
impact.
Well, it should be targeted, but not targeted to pork. Targeted to pork. I mean, no one ever expects the government to say, okay, this stuff, we really got to just not mess around with the pork because this is for COVID. But they never do. And they still throw yeah. it all in there. Yeah. So that's just sausage.
In an ideal
they could
world,
make
you
some,
wouldn't see that.
Can they make some Beyond Meat sausage that didn't go into the, you know, they have all the disgusting
that's
snouts
not quite as nasty.
And intestines that the normal sausage has in it?
I mean, yeah, we don't want any tails.
Tails, snout. Knuckles. Ugh. Okay.
No, it's everybody's right to complain about what's in this, except for we've had people who have come on this program and complained about the pork who are sticking pork back in it. I you're right. It's a disgusting sort of process.
One but person's pork is
I've yet to meet. Like this is an essential item for them. You know. You
how about no
through,
pork
I don't
from
know.
Anybody?
Okay.
But do you think they do it now? But they don't because we know how they work. You know how
I mean, look, if we could embarrass them on a regular basis, maybe they'd start to step down and do
remember
that.
We used to do that? We used to have...
we did. Remember the flying pigs?
We had a flying pigot. It was on... he would go past the cutout of Austin Powers, and it was on the end of like a string.
Steck would carry him on a... Yeah.
That's right. We don't do a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. We've been around a while. Joining us right now to talk more about the relief bill, what's in it, what's not, what this all means, is Tom Friedman. He's the New York Times foreign affairs columnist. He's also the author of Thank You for Being Late. And his latest column in today's New York Times is titled, Will Trump Force Principled Conservatives to Start Their Own Party? I hope so. Well, Tom, you may be getting more of your wish on this. the president's move on this does put Republicans in a pretty difficult position. What do they do?
Well, you know, it really is a problem, Becky, because as you guys have talked about earlier this morning, McConnell really wants this stimulus bill through now because in Georgia, the two Republican senators there running for re-election have been hammered by the Democrats over their party standing in the way of a stimulus bill. And right now, if you look at the latest polling from there, both the Democratic contenders are leading. So obviously McConnell has a big challenge there. I really don't know what he's going to do. I'm sure right now there's furious negotiations with the White House asking the president, what the hell are you doing? Where do you think this is going to go? And the fact that the president made this announcement last night, effectively, if you read the stories, they're so bizarre, sort of slipping out of his office, you know, with a tiny film crew going down to the basement of the White House, filming this announcement and then throwing it out into the public with zero consultation. The whole thing is just so suboptimal. This isn't just watching the sausage being made. This is just so suboptimal for a serious country in the middle of its worst public health crisis in its life.
You know, it's a fool's errand to try and figure out what happens next, but I'll ask you anyway. Do you think that something gets passed before the holidays, before the end of the year? I mean, it's not just this that matters, but the spending bill that's keeping the government open right now was part of this too. The bill was tied to that.
I have to believe it will, Becky, because the moment is so critical. You know, we're about to go into, I think, a much deeper and darker month of the pandemic. We have so many people whose relief is running out and are truly, truly hurting. So I have to believe at the end of the day, the power and logic of those two things will produce a bill. It will produce another compromise. I can't tell you what the contours of it are, though.
Earlier this month, you spent an hour speaking with President-elect Biden, and he laid out his thoughts for what he'd like to do during his term. What struck you as the most important things, the things that our viewers would care the most about?
You know, Becky, I think one of the most interesting things is his approach to China, and it happens to be very relevant this morning. Basically what Biden said is that he is not going to try to tackle the whole China market access issue as a bilateral issue between the U.S. and China. What he's going to try to do is leverage both our Asia-Pacific allies and the European Union. And I would say the Chinese read that column very closely, because you may have noticed this morning in Europe, they announced that they're close to a deal with the European Union to have their own bilateral trade access agreement with the EU. The deal is not done. And Biden last night, his aides tweeted out to the EU, hey, hold on, don't go there. So what you see, what the Chinese are doing, this is very important for every American company. They understand the thing they fear most, the thing they knew Trump could never organize, was a global coalition against them. They think Biden can, and Biden has declared, as in my interview, that he intends to. And so the Chinese are trying to divide right now, basically, the two great global economic centers, the EU and the United States, to make sure they can't gang up against China. So what's playing out here is very, very important.
The EU, what will their response be?
It's not clear, because there's a lot of division in the EU back between the Germans looking. They were offered. The Chinese are very smart about this. You know, they gave Germans unprecedented access for German automobile exports, but there are other issues that other EU countries care about. So there's tension in the EU here over this. But you can see what the Chinese are going to be doing is offering incredible goodies to anyone, you know, who won't line up with the Americans in a global market access coalition against them.
Hmm. Hey, Tom, let's talk more about the vaccines, the rollout, how things are going. And as you mentioned, it's anticipated that it's going to be some dark days ahead of us still. Where do you think we're doing? I mean, great news just announced this morning that the United States and Pfizer have struck a deal for an additional 100 million doses of that vaccine to come. There are other vaccines that could get approved in the next month or so, we hope. How are we doing so far?
You know, Becky, you know, one of the things I learned writing about in my last book about Moore's Law is the power of an exponential. It's really hard for the average person to, in their mind, grasp when something grows exponentially. You know, 2, 4, 8, you know, and it grows so fast. Well, it's not only about microchips, it's also about a virus. And when you have the numbers we're reaching now, you know, 250,000 new cases every day, and each one multiplying, then you factor in the idea that we may see a variant of the virus that spreads even more easily. Then you factor in right now, the hospitals in California announced this morning, I mean, they're many of them are just completely overwhelmed. We've got pop-up emergency rooms, people, doing surgery in storage areas. It's really frightening. That's the spillover from Thanksgiving. Now amplify that. You pick up the Times, yesterday I read about record number of travelers. I mean, compared to, earlier parts of this year. And January is going to be it's going to be hell on wheels.
I mean, I don't know that there's anything we can do to stop that at this point. It feels like we've kind of already laid the path at this point for what we're going to see.
We've just never been through something like this before, this kind of exponential around a virus. And it's all going to be happening when we're going through a transition in our national government with a president reluctant to leave. And so I think the amount of instability we're in for, and from a CNBC point of view, for markets to sort through all of this and try to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I still believe, the great news today, Joe was talking about this earlier, but, we're going to have Johnson & Johnson, we're going to have AstraZeneca. It would be fantastic, but I'm 67, and I'm in probably the second big group, cohort. That's probably not till the end of February, maybe March for me, So I'll be able to stick it out. I'm not worried, but God, when you think of people who now have run out of money, basically, or, facing eviction, the next 2 months could be really, unprecedented in terms of the pain on a lot of people in this country.
Tom, I can remember back in the lab. When I was in the lab, we would seed some agar with a solution with one, not one, but minimal amount of bacteria, and then we'd grow it, and it grows exponentially. And the word was within 2.5 days, if it was left, if it had plenty of things to live on, the entire planet would be covered by like 8 feet of that bacteria. That's how it worked. The thing that stops it, though, is that it can't do that because it doesn't have the, it doesn't have the food, doesn't have the room, there's constraints on it. And thank God there are some constraints on the virus, because if you do the exponential math on where we'd be already since the beginning of the pandemic to where we'd be, thankfully, we are not there. So we have done some things and we can still do some things. I'm just worried about Christmas, I guess, and what happened after Thanksgiving. And it's just such a weird thing to watch as the vaccine rollout is running headlong into what's going to be probably the worst period for transmission. It's weird, isn't it, to watch? And I just wish, I wish one would just go a little bit faster. I wish the vaccine part would go a little bit faster. No hope for anything like that, Tom, the dark, we've heard dark days are still coming for so long. I guess I just don't want to hear it.
Your mind fights against it, Joe, because of we aren't, we've never been up against this kind of force from the natural
not
world.
Not in our lives. Yeah. There's been some worse things. At least we got guys sequencing the genome in a day and a half and making something to, I mean, about the science of this. Think where we were with polio. We were flying totally blind trying to figure that out.
I mean, again, it gets to something I mentioned once before, I think, on the show, is that I think, Joe, that we are on the cusp of an amazing era of creative destruction, of Schumpeterian creative destruction.
Right.
Why is it? Well, never have more people had cheap tools of innovation. Never have more people had access to the most high-powered computing through the cloud.
Singularity, Tom. Singularity. Yeah, we got to live a little. I think each of us have to live about. Can we go 40? We got to go 40 years, and then we might make it to the singularity where we can be half machine, half man, and live forever. You want to do that? I don't know. Maybe we don't.
I don't want to do that, but I'm very excited.
Think of all the columns. You'd have so many columns. You'd want to. You wouldn't want to live on deadline still.
All I know is going to be a lot of amazing innovation after this pandemic, and it is going to destroy a lot of businesses, but it's going to accelerate and spawn, I think, amazing new opportunities too.
Should be, especially in medicine and Alzheimer's, cancer, diabetes, all the chronic things. The only thing we might not cure is old age. That's the only problem.
Tom, thank you for joining us. Happy holidays.
Anytime, you guys. Be well.
All right. We'll see you.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, COVID's new, more contagious variant and waiting out the dark days ahead with Dr. Atul Gawande.
We're in for still the surges for another few weeks. We're at 300,000 deaths. Already, the next 100,000 deaths are baked in with new infections in the last week or so. So it's really about, can we avoid the 500,000 deaths, which is just horrifying to even think about.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. Here's Becky Quick.
This is breaking news, and this is important. The White House and Pfizer have actually struck that deal that would see Pfizer provide 100 million additional doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. That deal was just announced moments ago. We were hearing about this last night from Meg Terrell that this was likely to get announced as early as today, but it's actually a done deal now. Pfizer already had a deal to deliver 100 million doses by the end of March. This is for an additional 100 million doses that I think most of them will be coming in the second quarter. I haven't seen all of the details on this because, again, the news is just crossing. But, Joe, again, this is just leading us down that path where we are getting lots and lots of vaccines. This is great news because you're going to have Moderna that's rolling out a ton of vaccines. You could see AstraZeneca or J&J get one of their vaccines passed as well and approved. And if that's the case, you're going to be talking about a lot of vaccines that are coming on the market in the very near future. And that would be fantastic news. But this is very good to hear, not just for the markets, but for the American people and for hope that we can get through this faster, that there is another deal struck between the White House and Pfizer for an additional 100 million doses of that vaccine.
It's weird. Because I can make both cases. Time has been crawling in 2020, but it's also time goes really quickly. Because I've been back here 8 months, Becky, at the NASDAQ. I can remember thinking, wow, do I really want to do that? And it's been 8 months back. I mean, I've been off a couple of times when I left and had to quarantine, but it was April 20th. So that went quickly. So I'm thinking 3 months will go by and we'll be getting this thing. We'll be getting this thing. It can't come fast enough, but and hopefully J&J's got a lot, like Kramer's been saying, and be great to have a lot of vaccines so everyone you know that wants it can get it, and it'll happen. You know, someone will, you know, you'll hear that down at a Walgreens. Oh yeah, they got vaccines, and that day will come. We got to get like in March. We need to get through March of 2020 before we could get to April, and then once we got to April, it became December. So it's crazy,
right? Right. Although it still feels like March in some ways, too. But you're right. A couple more months if we can get through this. This is really promising, really fantastic news. Joining us right now to talk about more about what this means for virus testing and the vaccine is Dr. Atul Gawande. He's a surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital. He's also a staff writer for The New Yorker, and he's a member of President-elect Biden's COVID advisory board. And Dr. Gawande, it's good to see you. Thanks for being with us today.
Delighted to be.
We've been concerned this week hearing about this new strain that's been circulating pretty rapidly in the UK. CDC says it's probably here undetected. And I mean, I think it's probably hard to argue against that, right?
That's right. I am concerned, and it likely is here. We have not got the genotyping, the testing deployed widely enough to know whether it's here, but I think that's happening now from what the CDC indicates in the next couple of weeks.
What does that mean just in terms of how we handle this, what the numbers are going to look like from here? President-elect Biden saying yesterday that the darkest days are ahead of us still.
Yeah, here's what to understand about the this potential, they call it a variant of concern. This viral mutation seems to drive a faster spread. It takes less virus to cause an infection. At a time where we already are at skyrocketing infection with millions of people infected, the measures we normally take will be slightly less effective in stopping it at a time when our hospitals are already in more than a third of the country full to overflowing. So the main concern is that it will accelerate the surge on surge that we've been having and extend the period of hospitalization and death rates that we've been seeing. What do we do about it? It's still the same practices that really work. It's just it requires an even higher level of vigilance if this does prove to be, and there's a lot more evidence that this transmits more efficiently. Now, it does not appear to cause, as of this moment, and there's still, you know, more monitoring to do, but it does not seem to cause increased death, increased serious illness. And so the main concern is that it's just even more easily spread.
You know, there's a lot of statistics that we've been running through. I heard one earlier this morning about how shopping mall traffic is down significantly from where we were, maybe down 40% from a year ago. But then anecdotally, you see things like pictures of local malls where there are big crowds in the food courts or other places. Or at Newark Airport, Brian Sullivan, one of our anchors, was traveling last weekend and tweeted out some pictures where people were crammed on top of each other for, it seemed like, miles trying to go through security. Are we doing this right or not?
Well, there's certainly signs that people are doing a lot better than a month ago. We see mask use up. We see people restricting how much they're indoors, cutting down on eating with people outside their household in restaurants and bars. And that just has to happen. And that is increasingly happening. And so we're seeing in places that had skyrocketing levels, they're starting to come down in many parts of the country. But there are other parts of the country where it clearly is we're behind the eight ball. Behavior's starting to change, but it's extremely hard around the holidays. And I think we're in for still the surges for another few weeks. We're at 300,000 deaths already. The next 100,000 deaths are baked in with new infections in the last week or so. So it's really about, can we avoid the 500,000 deaths, which is just horrifying to even think about?
Yeah. You're involved with the Moderna trial. I guess you're part of that and have gotten either, you don't know if it's the actual vaccination or the placebo?
That's right. I'm not involved in running the trial. I'm a patient in the trial. My mother at 84 said, I want to give back. And so she signed up for the trial. And I said, if my mom can do that, well, then I'll sign up for a vaccine trial. Happened to be Moderna available in our area. And so I took the, I entered the trial. I received a shot, but don't know if it's the placebo or if it's the vaccine. And happy to wait and find out.
How long ago did you get the shot and how'd you feel afterwards?
Well, so the first shot was in August, felt almost nothing. The second shot, which is the booster, comes 28 days after the first. So I got that in late September. And that one really knocked me down. I mean, 2 days later, I had fever, chills, and then, and you know, needed to stay home. I don't think it's been, I haven't needed to take a day out from my surgery practice or my public health work for more than a year. I barely ever let anything knock me down. But that one knocked me down. And then about 24 hours later, I was back on my feet and doing okay. So, you know, it does for a lot of people, a high percentage, especially younger people under 65, you do seem to have with these vaccines a significant reaction. That's the immune system kicking in and your antibodies being generated to the virus. And now, I think that tells me I might have received it. Honestly, it may well be that I had a placebo and I just imagine, you know, I had that reaction.
How'd your mom do with it?
My mom, you know, so we, of course, have compared notes and she had barely any reaction. Now, in the elderly, you see less than half having a major or significant reaction. So, you know, we don't know what to make of it. About 20%, 15, well, I'm going to get the percentages wrong, but there was a significant percentage in the placebo group who had these reactions. And so it is interesting psychologically to see how it plays out. But, you know, we're both sitting here thinking, my mom may not have gotten it, and I did, and yeah. Ironically, of all things.
That's, at least you admitted it, but that is kind of, that would be humorous. You got to admit, you know, your elderly mother probably got it and felt nothing. You got the placebo, You got to report back.
You can bet my mom is the one who wants to get unblinded and find out, you know.
If you find that out, you got to come. No, actually, you can't. You can't come back and tell us that because we'd be laughing at you.
Hey, Atul, the good news, though, in terms of this new virus strain in the UK, the best guesses are that these vaccines will still be effective against these new strains, too, right?
Yeah, the preliminary indications are that it drives an immune reaction. Moderna and Pfizer are now conducting tests to confirm immunogenicity and immune reaction that generates the effectiveness of the vaccine. And we have reason to believe this will be the case. But this is just the early days of doing testing. We have, 2020. Things keep coming out of the woodwork that show, the fight is harder than we keep thinking. But I am hopeful on that score. I'm concerned. I have clear concerns that it is highly transmissible, much, much more easily spread.
Dr. Galindo, I want to thank you for your time today. We always appreciate seeing you. Happy holidays, and we'll see you back here soon.
Thank you.
Next on Squawk Pod, it's the most wonderful time for e-commerce giants, head of the sports swag company Fanatics on pandemic holiday shopping.
The most interesting thing was that demand could have even been better if the shipping networks just had more capacity. There's so much pressure on these shipping networks this year.
Plus, who's the best-selling sports team this season?
I don't think I'm going to be able to get this. The Bengals.
Definitely not.
Bet you won't get it. We're back after this.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Demand for energy is projected to continue rising in the future. To help keep up, Chevron is increasing their U.S. oil and gas production, and they're innovating to help do it responsibly across their operations, including their Gulf of Mexico facilities, which are some of the world's lowest carbon intensity operations, helping supply energy that's affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/meetingdemand.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
You're listening to Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan and Becky Quick. Here's Joe.
Maybe it was one of the bright sides, Becky, is, and good morning and welcome back, is that if it had been 3 months, we wouldn't appreciate every single thing that happens in the year. Now, every single thing we've missed out on for an entire year.
Everybody's missed a birthday. Everybody's missed an anniversary. Everybody's missed a graduation or at least a step up from whatever grade you were in. I mean, it's like the grade equalizer. Yeah. Every one of the kids got, hosed on something.
Yep, but one of the biggest shopping weeks of the year, consumers are leaning on e-commerce to deliver for the holidays. E-marketer projects online sales will grow more than 30% this year. Joining us now, Michael Rubin, Executive Chairman of Fanatics. Michael, we're going to get to your new partnership with Barnes & Noble Education. We're going to do that. We had plans earlier. Things happen. But first, we want to ask you about retail in the final push before Christmas. What's the biggest selling jersey? What else is going on? Anything else going on in the NBA? Did I miss something? Are we playing again? How the Sixers looking? Start and go wherever you want.
Sure. Well, first off, it's definitely e-commerce, as I think everybody knows, has been terrific. I think we definitely skipped ahead 2 or 3 years forward from an e-commerce perspective. I think in general, retail has been pretty strong too. One big difference this holiday season is there's been so much pressure on the different shipping networks to deliver. I think there was even more demand that could have been had. So as good as business is, it could have been better. And that's, I think, something that's pretty interesting. From our business, I think it's been very broad-based. Joe, I'll ask you a question. You're generally very good knowing what teams the best and what the best players are. What do you think the number one selling team is today across our entire business?
You mean across all sports?
All sports. And don't get this wrong. There's big pressure on you.
I don't think I'm going to be able to get this.
You know the answer, and you're generally so good.
The Bengals.
Definitely not even a possibility. No team you're ever a fan of will ever be the number one team, but it starts with the same first initial. It's the Buffalo Bills.
The Browns?
The Buffalo Bills are the number one team.
I would have never gotten that. I would have never got. I would have said the Browns before that because all the excitement about.
Buffalo Bills since Saturday have been the number one team. They've actually done more business this week than number 2, 3, and 4 combined.
I would have never
seen that
gotten
for about
that.
25 years. Dodgers doing great. Lakers doing great. Chiefs, Steelers, Cowboys. But the Bills are a big surprise. I thought it was the first time I could ever stump you on what the hottest team was.
That I would not have. I still think, I'm still thinking of Mahomes and Brady, I think, is probably making a.
Mahomes and Brady are number one and two. Nothing changes. It's always Tommy number one or two and Mahomes number one and two. So they're doing great. Also, LeBron. Two is new to the list. He's performing really well. Mookie Betts continues to do great as well. Those are the top five selling jerseys today. But overall, back to your overall question, I think e-commerce, you're going to see 30% plus across the board. We had a terrific year. But again, the most interesting thing was that demand could have even been better if the shipping networks just had more capacity. But with Corona delivering vaccines for the first time, there's so much pressure on these shipping networks this year.
Still thinking about Buffalo. I guess you think that they could do it, you think. And remember in the old days, it was said, Jim Kelly, they'd get there and it had never happened. So you think they could do it this year? Who do you think?
I don't know if they could do it, but I can tell you one thing. Buffalo Bills fans are really excited this week. The Lakers fans and the Dodgers fans had been our top teams. The Bills fans came out and said, we haven't been here for 25 years. We're going to show you how excited we are and how much we care. And they've opened their wallets up in a big way.
When you said it begins with a B, I almost said Barnes & Noble, just to give you a really good segue into this partnership. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're super excited. You know, for us, at Fanatics and Lids together with Barnes & Noble, what we want to do is create the single best experience for the 775 universities that Barnes & Noble Education works with and also for their college students. So what we're really doing is leveraging three great companies coming together to improve the experience for, again, college students and the 775 universities who are all pressured to make more money and want to innovate. We're going to take all the e-commerce capabilities of Fanatics and put it behind the 775 universities to help them have the single best offering. Better technology, better mobile, broader assortment, enhanced CRM marketing. Lids, which is the number one retailer of licensed sports stores, understands the young consumer, bringing that to the college campus. But Barnes & Noble Education is a company we've admired for a long time, operating 775 campus stores. And for us to work together to strengthen the offering, to benefit the students, something I think is going to be terrific. And, you know, it's a great company. Mike Huseby and the team have done a really interesting job. I think the company's kind of been understood. And so from my perspective, we looked at it and said, we thought we could really work together to strengthen this offering.
Well, when it rains, it pours in terms of sports. I don't know if you looked at what's on today. If you want to. I guess it's coming all the way back, Michael. Can you tell me when in 2021, I guess the vaccine rolls out? Do the ratings immediately come back, or is it fragmented from streaming and all these other outlets? What's really going on?
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things happen. First is the shift in calendars definitely confused sports fans. And I think in general, going back to a more normalized calendar, I think it's going to help ratings. In addition, what I always talk about, it's so difficult to look at a television rating only. Again, that is the same thing of looking at a brick-and-mortar retailer sales without looking at e-commerce. Today, you know, I consume most of my sports clips through social media. I think you need to look at all media pieces cobbled together into one number. So I think there's always going to be pressure on the broadcast television partner media ratings because social media, digital consumption continue to get bigger and bigger. But I do think in general, sports are going to have, fans want their sports. I think there's going to be tremendous consumption. I do think it's going to be exciting in the second half of the year to get fans back in the stands and with more normality and kind of return to some level of what the new is.
Really quickly, you've got more eyeballs that are coming from social media networks. Are those as profitable or is it a losing proposition just in terms of profits?
You know, I think today the dollars received from social media Eyeballs definitely smaller than traditional broadcast, but that's our job as entrepreneurs and innovators to figure out how to do more interesting things. The way you can communicate with a fan one by one is so much more interesting via digital media and social media than it is through traditional broadcast TV. So today it's smaller. Over time, I think the sports leagues, teams, ownership, figure out how to create a better experience and actually make more money from that long term.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
That's Squawk Pod for today. Thank you for listening today, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. And to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you're listening right now. We'll meet you back here tomorrow, Christmas Eve.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.